afternoon, and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Tuesday, to get you through this crisis in a world where few things are reliable. We are reliable. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. We're on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming on the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it, you should download it immediately. We got a lot to get to, only an hour left to do it. The cleanup at CHOP begins, but what is really going on? Our cops are getting ready to be set up by a council that's not going to allow them to take back that precinct without some pushback. We'll get into that. Sela City Administrator Don Wayman's going to stop by. He faces calls for his ouster because he criticized the political organization Black Lives Matter. Plus, Steve Cardian, he is a career law enforcement officer with Trump's 2020 advisory board. He'll be joining us to analyze the defund police movement. We're going to get into that and so much more. This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So as we've been discussing all throughout the show, the cleanup at CHOP, the Capitol Hill occupied protest, it started today, and it only took two black teenagers to be murdered for the city to act. It only took four black men to be shot before the mayor decided that she had to finally do her job and take control of the city, take control of this neighborhood. But of course, this is a slow process. It will be a slow process. This is the first step today in what will probably become a days-long process. Assistant Deputy Chief Adrian Diaz of the SPD spoke with Como TV moments after SDOT, the Seattle Department of Transportation, began to remove some of the concrete barriers.
So far, you know, everything's been peaceful this morning, so this is a good sign. And we're just trying to make sure that, you know, people in the park are getting services that our departments, many of our departments are out there today already trying to reach out to people and getting people housing and other services. So that's a continued effort. Having this being able to be cleaned up and being able to allow traffic to start to move through is another positive sign. So hopefully as we, you know, do these incremental steps that we'll have a good, safe outcome.
So you made mention of getting the cars, the traffic to be able to move through. That's really what today was about. And last week, obviously, there were failed attempts at trying to remove some of the concrete barriers. The reason why SDOT is doing that is they want to start to reopen the streets so that cars can start to come in and out of the area. Folks live there, remember. Folks work there. And of course, this is a densely populated neighborhood, and so there are folks who are driving through there. And so they want to make it a little bit more open. And when you make it a little bit more open, you start to bring back the neighborhood to where it once was. But at some point, and I'm assuming it's going to happen in the next few days based on some of the sources I've been speaking to in law enforcement, I'm thinking it's going to happen in the next few days. The city will have to take back that precinct. And unfortunately, it's setting up, unintentionally, police officers in a trap. Jesus Villahermosa is a retired sergeant with the Pierce County Sheriff's Department for the last couple decades. He's been considered a use of force expert. And he, talking to Como TV, acknowledges that it's possible that there's going to have to be some force used by the cops in retaking this precinct.
I just think that there's going to have to be action taken at some point if there isn't a breakthrough. And if force has to be used, then force has to be used as long as it's necessary and reasonable.
Now, he's 100% right. If you have to use force, you're going to have to use force. If someone is going to get in the way of us taking back property that doesn't belong to the hostage takers, belongs to us, belongs to the people, belongs to the police department, you're going to have to use that force. Now, obviously, there's no one who wants to use force. They don't want to have to do it. But last week, apparently, a dude pulled out a gun on a city worker. You do that with a cop, they're going to use force, rightfully so. But the problem is, the second that any officer decides to use force in taking back this East Precinct, regardless as to whether or not a reasonable person or even an unreasonable person would look at that and say, it's clear as day the cops acted appropriately, I would have done the same thing. Doesn't matter. The second any use of force occurs, you're going to have the city council, screaming about police brutality, trying to enrage the protester class in the city once again. You're going to have the city attorney, Pete Holmes, likely going after the cops. Or depending on the kind of force that's used, maybe Dan Satterberg, King County prosecutor. They will go after cops and not just taking their jobs, but prosecuting them. It is a trap. The city, unintentionally, is setting up police officers for a trap. If any force happens, any force whatsoever is going to be exploited by the council. It's going to be exploited by some activists, not all, but some activists. And they're going to use it to, again, go after police officers and try to get more people to show back up to CHOP. And again, retake their CHOP, their area. Theirs. It's not theirs. Any force will result in that. Now, of course, you can fix this by having the council have some kind of buy-in, because this decision is all political. This decision's political. Now, of course, you can have the council go with the cops, go with them, walk by them back into that precinct and have some kind of unity, imagery that can unite a city that's dealing with this kind of unrest. But of course, they're not going to do that because most of the council backs the protesters. Either because they ideologically identify with the message or because they need that base to come out and support them when they run for re-election or run for higher office. Teresa Mosqueda, for example, a Seattle City Councilwoman, she is going to run for mayor. This has been in the works for a long time. In fact, let us remind folks right now, this is Jason Tells the Future, producer Peyton, write down the time, the date. Teresa Mosqueda is running for mayor. She is not going to get in the way of any of these protesters. She'll stand beside them, making excuses when a protester screams officers to commit suicide. Otherwise, they're going to murder them themselves. Tear them apart was the language they used, I believe. She's standing out there with them because she relies on that base to be united behind her candidacy. Lorena Gonzalez, the Seattle City Council president, she's not going to go out there. She's someone who deeply, deeply distrusts police officers, and she's running for King County executive against Dow Constantine. Again, producer Peyton, Jason Tells the Future. Note the time, the date. What is it? The 30th. Lorena Gonzalez is running against Dow Constantine for King County executive. Same thing. She is counting on the base of support, the ones who show up to these protests, the ones who showed up to CHOP, the ones who threw bottles and incendiary devices at cops. She is counting on them for her support for her campaign. She's not going to get involved. Shama Samwa, we know she's not going to get involved. She legitimately doesn't like cops. I know that she tries to tiptoe around the idea of abolishing the cops, but when you want to cut the police force by 50% their budget, that's tantamount to abolishing the police. If she shows up, she's going to show up to cheer on the protesters pushing back against the cops. The council members who are maybe more reasonable, like an Alex Peterson, who still is very far to the left, but he's more reasonable. Him showing up isn't going to be enough because the council doesn't care about Alex Peterson. He's not part of the cool kid crowd. He's not a hardcore, unreasonable progressive. So he's not going to be able to show up and offer any kind of support that would show unity. And that's a shame. And so I hope the cops who are listening, and I know we have a lot of cops who listen either live or via the podcast. And I'll be writing something for KTTH.com tomorrow on this. Do whatever you can to not take the bait. Defend yourself, but don't take any bait. Because they're going to be baiting you into some kind of action the entire time, and the city will leave you hanging out to dry. That is their MO. Right now, they're still pretending that CHOP isn't even a problem. They want to pretend that the violence that we've seen, oh, it's completely unrelated to CHOP and the protests. Huh? What? CHOP isn't responsible for the gun violence. It has nothing to do with it. It's just, quote-unquote, gun violence. Right, Lorena Gonzalez?
Gun violence is a public health epidemic across the country.
Oh, okay.
Seattle is not an exception.
Interesting. I don't see autonomous zones popping up in some other places, namely red cities and red states. It's weird how they're not having the same problems, right, Shamasawa?
The violence was happening on Capitol Hill and in other parts of the city long before the CHOP occupation was created by the movement, and that we should completely reject the false claims that have no basis in statistical analysis, the CHOP occupation and the movement was the reason for any of the violence.
CHOP played no role whatsoever. I mean, other than the shooting happened in the cop-free CHOP zone where untrained Antifa LARPing goons decided to use weapons to supposedly protect themselves before cleaning up the crime scene so cops couldn't actually investigate. On a street, by the way, where police precinct has been completely abandoned because of CHOP. But other than that, it had nothing to do with CHOP. It's just some random violence. I mean, just remember, a month ago, there were a whole bunch of shootings outside the precinct. What's that? Sorry. Yeah, there weren't a whole bunch of shootings outside of the precinct just a month ago when CHOP didn't actually exist. Weird how that works. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. I'll be talking about this later this hour on the Tucker Carlson Show. Of course, you can catch it tonight at 9 o'clock. Or just go over to our Facebook page and our Twitter feed, and I'll have video posted there as well. Twitter.com/JasonRants or Facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So obviously, we are still talking about the coronavirus pandemic. Yes, we are still in the middle of a pandemic where the numbers of positive cases continue to rise. Again, the context is incredibly important in understanding who is getting sick and the death rate. The death rate remains remarkably low, even in the states that are getting hit the hardest right now with this new surge of cases. We also know the context is when you do more testing, you see more positive cases. The coronavirus is a very contagious virus. It passes easily. We've got a whole bunch of protests happening right now in which the coronavirus is likely being spread. Plus, you have the reopening of the economy. You combine that with way more testing capability, you're going to see bigger numbers. But the important number to look at constantly is the death rate. Now, you shouldn't completely dismiss the surge in cases, even though they're mostly, depending on where you're looking at, but for the most part, they're mostly people under the age of 60. We're talking actually about young people in their 20s and 30s, folks who are least likely to get hit hard by the coronavirus, at least as it relates to mortality, unless they have some sort of underlying condition. But you do still have to pay attention, because if you are that 27-year-old or 33-year-old who ends up getting sick with the coronavirus, if you have contact with people who are 60-plus or 80-plus, or someone who has an immunity issue, a compromise, then it can become deadly. So we should be paying attention to all of this. But is there enough data to suggest that the schools, for example, continue to be closed, or sporting events, sporting leagues, I should say, continue to be left alone? Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, talking with Dr. Anthony Fauci earlier today, he kind of lit into the doctor.
This all begs the question, what are we going to tell the people the truth? That it's okay to take their kids back to school. Dr. Fauci, every day, virtually every day, we seem to hear from you things we can't do. But when you're asked, can we go back to school? I don't hear much certitude at all. I hear, well, maybe it depends. All of this body of evidence about schools around the world shows there's no surge. All of the evidence shows that it's rare. I mean, we've so politicized this and made it politically correct that the WHO releases that it's rare, and you have a scientist up there honestly giving her opinion. What happens to her? She's blackballed, and her report that she refers to is taken off the website. When you go to that scientist's speech and you try to clink on the lick, the WHO has now screened it from us because it said something that's not politically correct. Guess what? It's rare for kids to transmit this. But I hear nothing of that coming from you. All I hear, Dr. Fauci, is we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't play baseball. Well, even that's not based on the science. I mean, flu season peaks in February. We don't know that COVID's going to be like the flu season. It might, but we don't know that. But we wouldn't ban school in October. You might close some schools when they get the flu. We need to not be so presumptuous that we know everything. But my question to you is, can't you give us a little bit more on schools that we can get back to school, that there's a great deal of evidence, and it's actually good evidence. The kids aren't transmitting this. It's rare. And the kids are staying healthy. And that, yes, we can open our schools.
And so the reason why we played that full 90-second clip is because it gives you a sense of not just how he's feeling, but I think how a lot of folks are feeling. They're looking at the data. They're looking at the reports. Sometimes they're getting mixed messages, but there is some good news in all of this. We should, as Rand Paul just said, be celebrating some of this news. That it would appear that kids are not the ones who are pushing the disease out there as much as certainly about 2 or 3 months ago we believed that was the case. And I'm certainly willing to give a pass to doctors and scientists, experts who get things wrong when dealing with something that's brand new. I think all of us should. But at some point, if they got it wrong and were confident or semi-confident that they got it wrong, that should inform future decisions. It should. And to be fair, Dr. Fauci basically made the same point, not just about schools, but also he was tied to these media reports saying he didn't want the NFL to continue or different leagues to continue. So he addressed that.
So very quickly, Senator Paul, I agree with a lot of what you say about, you know, this idea about people having to put their opinions out without data. And sometimes you have to make extrapolations because you're in a position where you need to at least give some sort of recommendation. But if you were listening, and I think you were, to my opening statement and my response to one of the questions, I feel very strongly we need to do whatever we can to get the children back to school. So I think we are in lock agreement with that.
Good.
The other thing that I'd like to clarify very briefly is that when things get in the press of what I supposedly said, I didn't say. I never said we can't play a certain sport. What happens is that people in the sport industry, they could either be people from Players Association, owners, people involved in the health of the players, ask me opinions regarding certain facts about the spread of the virus, what the dynamics are. I give it, and then it gets interpreted that I'm saying you can't play this sport or you can't play that sport. I agree with you. I am completely unqualified to tell you whether you can play a sport or not. The only thing that I can do is, to the best of my ability, give you the facts and the evidence associated with what I know about this outbreak.
And certainly I trust him and his judgment more than I will some other people who literally have no training whatsoever in medicine. But I'm glad that Dr. Fauci is being honest there and saying, look, I never said what they said I said about the sports leagues, but I'm acknowledging that I'm not an expert. Good for him for saying that, because there are a lot of people right now who are very clearly not experts who want to pretend that they are. Some of it is because they want to claim proudly that they've got the backs of these players. They've only got their best interests in mind, but they have no clue. Case in point, the ECS group, Emerald City Supporters. I know you guys don't like soccer. It's okay. You're wrong on that. I love soccer. But ECS is a group of mostly politically far-left fringe people who are supporters of the Seattle Sounders. Now, the MLS is set to return to play. They're doing a tournament in Orlando, Florida. And ECS put out a statement the other day saying, here's our position on the reopening of MLS. And by the way, as if we need a statement on their position. I don't care what their position is. No one but themselves care about the position of ECS on literally anything. But they came out and they put out the statement, we support the players and we are deeply concerned. We don't want it to reopen right now because what if our players get sick? They're going to Florida. The subtext to me when I'm reading the thing, Florida, run by that evil Republican Ron DeSantis. Shouldn't happen. Who cares what ECS thinks? Who cares what a fan club says? A bunch of adults who act like children. This is the same group of people who wanted to back the Antifa flag. Because they all think they're heroes fighting Nazis. But they've got a statement, and I guess we should listen to it. And then the way the media generally covers it, I'm glad they didn't in this case. Large, meaningful fan group, they've come out. They say no to returning to... Is the soccer league on the line? Will the league listen? That's the kind of nonsense we'd normally get from some of these folks. So I'm glad they mostly rejected that. I'm so glad they rejected that. Their statement that no one asked for is not in line with medical experts. And let me tell you, the MLS or the NBA or the NFL or the NHL, MLB, all of these organizations, they have everything to lose if all of a sudden they restart and, God forbid, a player doesn't just get sick but gets deathly ill or dies. That could ruin an entire league. The backlash from the fan base, even if it was well-intentioned, would be swift and harsh. So let's stop pretending that the people who have more on the line than some fringe group of adult men acting like children fans, let's stop pretending that they don't have anything on the line. They do. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message, 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, we're going to talk with the city administrator, Don Wayman, from the city of Sela. He's in some hot water for some criticisms of the Black Lives Matter political movement. Some people want him to resign. Some people want his head. We're going to get into it with Don Wayman when we return right here on The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The city administrator for the city of Sela is under fire from progressives in the community after he dared to criticize the political organization Black Lives Matter, calling them a neo-Marxist group, which, to be fair, Black Lives Matter activists openly claimed to be. Don Wayman is the administrator, and he joins me now. Don, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So the issue is a little bit complex because there's a lot of moving pieces and it's developed over the course of the last week or so. Take us through how this all started. It happened, I know, at a meeting in which you made some comments that upset some folks.
Actually, it was at a Black Lives Matter protest in the city of Sela almost 4 weeks ago now. It was kind of like a triple witching hour there. We had a high school graduation that day. Mm-hmm. We had cruisers that were in town who were mostly diametrically opposed to the protesters. Approximately 100 protesters came into town marching down the street. It was a peaceful protest. They were shouting their slogans and so on. And they stopped at our civic center and began protesting and using their signs and, you know, saying their slogans. And I was parked across the street, and there was a city council member, Deputy Mayor Holly Cousins, parked next to me. I didn't know who she was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know her by sight, and she called me over and asked me a couple of questions, asked me what I thought about it, and I said it looked like a communist indoctrination. And then I think she asked me something. It was very loud because we had engines revving on one side because the cruisers weren't happy with the protesters. The protesters were shouting on the other side, and she asked me words to this effect, did I expect trouble? And that's when I said, oh, you know, we don't have much trouble in Sela because we have the highest per capita concealed carry rate in the state. And I said it in jest, but that's a true statement, by the way.
And I heard there was some kind of accusation of you maybe padding your chest to...
That simply wasn't true.
Yeah.
That was an embellishment. So, supposedly her father said, well, we must be communists too. I did not hear that. I just simply walked away, didn't think much about it. I thought it was pretty innocuous. Walked away. Protest finished, everybody went home, and suddenly she's Facebook posting about my racist comments. And that precipitated an interview with the Seattle-owned Yakima Herald, mm-hmm. and they asked me some direct questions. I considered no commenting, but it was Holly Cousins said this, Holly Cousins said that, and I'm an old Marine Corps colonel. You know, I'm going to call it like I see it. maybe the honey badger of city administrators. I'm just not going to put up with that.
Yeah.
And I pointed out what I know. I know it's a neo-Marxist organization. I know that their presuppositions are false, that there's systemic injustice in this country, that the judicial system is canted against them, and that's not true. You have to take that as a supposition, and it's not. And if you just peel the onion a tiny bit on the Black Lives Matter protesters or on the actual ideology that the Black Lives Matter movement follows, it is revolutionary. It is an intent of destroying our nation, destroying the underpinnings of our Constitution and the economic underpinnings of our country. They want wholesale change. They want us to forget our history. They want us to vilify the great things that were great men and women that preceded us, which is an absolute falsehood. They want to. It's very similar to the Maoist cultural revolution that was, done back in the last century, which of course resulted in a horrific human tragedy. So I see them for what they are. I can sniff them out. I've dealt with and fought against tyrants my entire adult life, and these young people, in my estimation, are very poorly educated. They do not truly understand history.
You're talking about the greater protesters who are involved in the movement.
Protesters. I put them in three categories, these protesters. You've got the real ideologues, and there's not that many of them. They shout slogans. They work on the emotions of individuals. And then you got the thugs, the looters, the robbers, the people who assault and even murder. And they're opportunistic. And then there's the third and largest category. They're the people that are willingly led into this situation based on emotion, based on a lack of reason, and based on hopes. So,
and actually, the language you used during a council meeting was devoid of intellect or reason, which some of the protesters took particular issue to, including a middle school teacher who showed up to one of the protests calling for you to essentially be fired or to step down. And they're saying, look, we're not devoid of intellect or reason. So what say you?
If they came back to me and said, hey, it's not a neo-Marxist organization or movement because, hey, if I'm not spot on, tell me why and tell me how. Instead of objecting and saying, hey, I'm a teacher, you're wrong.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. Please explain to me, a teacher or a professor or Maoist or cultural Marxist, please tell me what's wrong with what I said. Moreover, please tell me what's racist about what I said.
Well, and the person there's you're referring to, or at least one of the people you're referring to, is quoted in the Yakima Herald as Kayla Lally. She's a Sela middle school teacher, and she said to them, as the mother of two Black children, I can't trust Donald Wayman as my city administrator. So regardless of your political positions on this and whether or not it's accurate or not, it doesn't matter. You have 100% the right to say it, and anyone who wants to come up and try to take away your job as a city administrator or anything else for simply expressing an opinion is ridiculous. But for the folks who say that because you hold a different viewpoint than they can't trust you, what's your response to that?
I would say they would need to judge me by my actions rather than if they have objections to my political viewpoint and they don't trust me. Please point out any time in my life where I've been racist or been accused of racism. Now, I spent many, many years in the Marine Corps, almost 27 years. I don't challenge anybody to talk to any Marine that ever worked with me. They would laugh. They would find that quite funny. They might say, yeah, that Colonel Wayman, he hated everybody. But they wouldn't say I hated anybody based on a particular color. You know, I have, and of course that organization values an individual based on what they bring to the organization as far as skill sets.
Where do you stand, and I'm sorry because we're running low on time, where do you stand right now as the city administrator for Sela? Obviously there's the calls for you to step down. I don't anticipate you deciding to do that.
Yeah, but I work at the pleasure of the mayor, and I have her full confidence. She has put out a proclamation putting that out. The city council had a meeting, a special meeting last Wednesday, and nobody made a motion to censure me or even discipline me because there was nothing to discipline me for. So that's where I stand. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to take a knee. I'm here if anybody wants to have a rational discussion about this with me. I'm at their disposal.
Is Selah the city changing demographically, at least ideologically? Because it feels like we've been getting more of these stories, and I can never tell if it's actual residents of Selah who are showing up and getting angry, or if it's from outsiders.
No, I think that's definitely a misunderstanding. It's just not true that the city of Selah is turning out in large numbers. That's just not the truth. Lots of outsiders. I've had hate mail from West Palm Beach, Florida. I mean, they've got quite a network. I've had people signing petitions for me to go from Canada. So, just little old Selah city administrator. Yeah. Never thought it would come to this. I thought I'd be worrying about water, sewer, parks and recreation, police departments, and fire. But now it's changed.
I'm glad that the mayor has your back. Again, you're not taking a position that is outside of mainstream thinking. It certainly may be uncomfortable for some folks on the left, but for folks on the right, I don't think they'll find a lot to disagree on. They might find some of it to disagree on, but not a whole lot of it. We've been talking
And let me tell you.
Let me tell you this, 20 seconds.
Selah is not the Quad at Evergreen College. Freedom of speech, freedom of thought is not some monolithic thing that must be enforced. Okay? We have not gone that crazy yet. And we need to be very careful across our state, across our country, not to allow that tyranny of thought, that tyranny of action to actually take hold in our communities.
Well, fingers crossed that doesn't happen in the city of Selah. Don Wayman is the city administrator, and he joined us this afternoon. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho, 1-800-465-8770. If you want to join the conversation, when we come back, we're going to check in with a member of the president's 2020 advisory board to get a law enforcement reaction to the calls to defund the police. We'll get to that and so much more right here on The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to The Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Progressive politicians and activists alike, they continue to push for the defunding of police in New York City. Their mayor, Bill de Blasio, has agreed to cut $1 billion in funding from the NYPD budget, a city that once thanked officers for their heroism on 9/11, now making their jobs considerably more dangerous. Joining me on the line to discuss is a career law enforcement officer. He's a member of the Trump 2020 Advisory Board. Steve Cardian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So, big picture first, this whole idea of defunding the police, which means like 20 different things. What's your response?
Basically, it's dangerous. It's deeply irrational. It's also devoid of all common sense. I've never seen where taking less cops in any community makes it safer.
So what is ultimately, do you think, the goal of the folks who are calling for the defunding of police if just logically we would say that this could lead to more crime?
Oh, it's definitely going to lead to more crime. And we see that every single one of them, they're democratically run cities.
Yep.
And they've been failing for a long time. Yeah, New York, Chicago, Detroit, Baltimore, these are all communities that have had lengthy problems with not only poverty, but high rates of crime. And if you look in Chicago, I mean, David Brown, he was the commissioner in Denver. I spoke on that case a number of times. And he's now the commissioner or superintendent in Chicago. He's a great boss. And apparently they're doing their job, but they don't have the support of the mayor, Lori Lightfoot. She's just not there for him. They've got to bring in the feds and enforce the RICO Act. So what happens is the FBI comes in, ATF, whoever it is, and they set up these, they don't set them up, they arrange to have these gangs arrested. They lock up, and I worked for the U.S. Marshals after I retired. So I was in the Southern District of New York when they did this with the Trinitarios. So they round up 30, 40, 50 gang members. They bring them in, they keep them in there, and they keep hitting them and hitting them and hitting them, and eventually they flip because they're facing 150 years
mm-hmm.
for, you know, the RICO stat, conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to run a criminal enterprise, and that's how they flip them. But they're not federal friendly. They're a sanctuary city. I don't think they want much to do with the feds at all.
So then what do you think is a reasonable response to this? Because I look at what's going on, and part of me hopes that this is just one moment in time, that this is an idea that's going to peter out once some of the protesters start to calm down a little bit. Obviously, they're, you know, folks are dealing with a lot of strong emotional responses to what's been going on. What is ultimately the best move for the president at this point if you've got cities that just won't participate or cooperate federally?
Well, President Trump continues to make law and order a key theme to his safety reforms, and he's rapidly and smartly opening up the economy. Joe Biden just did his first interview in almost 3 months mm-hmm. earlier today. It's going to have to come down. They're going to have to act, or the federal government's going to have to come in and do whatever enforcement is necessary to take back those cities, because they're violating people's federal rights by not protecting them. And the other issue is you've got over 100, now the number's up in this weekend in Chicago, over 100 people shot. You know, where's Black Lives Matter? Where is Reverend Al Sharpton? They're absent. They're silent. Joe Biden today, earlier again, he spoke on a bunch of things, mainly the coronavirus. He didn't mention the protests. He didn't mention the riots. He didn't mention defunding police. And these are all essential things that need to be talked about by anybody that's attempting to be a leader of our country.
Steve Cardian is a member of the Trump 2020 Advisory Board. He has a career in law enforcement, not just as a sergeant and a detective, but you just heard his work with the U.S. Marshal. When you're talking about federal agencies essentially coming in and not quite taking over a city, but doing some of the policing, how exactly would that work? And why would a conservative who would normally say this should be either a state's rights issue or a local issue, what's the argument to back an idea like that?
Well, if we look during the Obama and Biden administration, Chicago was just as bad as it is now. Cities like New York, I don't think we're for a long time going to get this back because of what de Blasio and Cuomo have done. The city is at a ruin. But if you look at places like Seattle and you look at other cities that can be managed, can be saved, he's still going to leave it up to the mayors, to the governors. It's primarily their responsibility. And I'm sure that there's something that AG Barr can do to enforce laws and bring federal law enforcement in there. They don't have to be invited. So that'll be yet to see. I don't want to get ahead of the president because I'm not exactly sure what he's going to do, but I know he'll do something.
When you reflect back on your career in law enforcement, have you ever experience this kind of animus towards your career?
Never. And you talked about 9/11. I was retired from the police agency that I retired from, but still in law enforcement. And I wore my uniform down there, and I marched in the St. Paddy's Day parade. In 2022, right after the World Trade Center, and I spent a week down there. And I have some ailments from that, but people were coming up to you and thanking you and hugging you and offering to buy you drinks. The atmosphere, it made you feel like we were a country, that we were one, that you did have the support. We don't have that now, and that's killing everybody, because not only police officers can't really be proactive because of COVID, but now they're not going to have the backing. And if they take away the qualified immunity from mm-hmm. officers, you're not going to have proactive policing will be a thing of the past.
Well, and yeah, we can speak to that right here in Seattle, where while there's still qualified immunity, it's certainly been easier to go after police officers. But for the last several years, because of the way the council has treated the SPD, there's been virtually no proactive policing. And cops will tell you how important that aspect of it all is.
Yeah, and I think in your case in Seattle, 98% of your problem is your mayor. She is 98% of the problem, because I know that the chief of police didn't want to give up that yep. precinct, wants to get in there and clean that place out. And now they've got people out of there, so they're going to have to go in at a very specific time with a very specific amount of men, with an organized entrance, if you will, to be able to get those people out of there.
But how do you do that without using force? Even though the force, and we've been talking about it throughout the show today, the force that's used by the officers there in taking back this precinct will almost assuredly be appropriate, given what we know about the protesters and how they're saying by no means will they ever leave. But we also know that any use of force is going to be exploited by this council to talk about how evil cops are.
They will. And I know that they've been limited to be able to use tear gas. I'm a use of force expert. I've taught defensive tactics to police all over the world. You've got to, if you are met with force, you have to use slightly more force than what you're being met with. And it's like, it depends upon what the use of force continuum looks like, a ladder or a circle, but you'll follow them up and down. If they stop or slow down, you stop or you slow down. If it gets elevated, you have to get elevated. But use of force is not pretty. That's why, you know, lawful but awful, they call it sometimes,
yeah.
where it is legal, but use of force isn't pretty. You know, when you see a police officer wrestling with somebody that doesn't want to be taken into custody, there's nothing good that could come out of that visually, if you will.
So last question for you. When you see what's going on, not just in Seattle and New York, but really all across the country, the general lawlessness, from the looting and the rioting to the tearing down of statues and the attacks on police officers, how do you think this impacts President Trump's reelection campaign?
I think that, again, he's the law and order president. I don't think Joe Biden, during the Obama administration, we saw nothing but contempt for the police, dating back to Beergate, when President Obama began criticizing people, police officers, before they had the facts. And it was Beergate with the Cambridge Police Department, with Professor Gates, it was.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, politicians thought, because the president did it, that it was okay to criticize officers. And then we had what Black Lives Matter is fostered after, Trayvon Martin. He was found, I was on Fox actually when the gentleman was testifying, that he saw him mounted on him, pounding his face into the pavement. And so as much of a bad person as George Zimmerman was, he was justified by the courts.
We've been talking with Steve Cardian. He is a member of the Trump 2020 Advisory Board. He spent a career in law enforcement. He knows what it is he's talking about when it comes to these issues. Steve, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Jason. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. You've been listening to The Jason Rand Show. Really do appreciate it. Don't forget, I am on Tucker Carlson Tonight. You can check it out on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jason Rand Show, or, of course, on Twitter, twitter.com/Jason Rand. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.